Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Good morning, everyone. Are we a changed nation today because of the assassination attempt on a member of Congress on Saturday that took six other people's lives and wounded more than a dozen? There are facts today. There is sadness. There is grief today. There is heated political debate today. We will give plenty of attention to all of them and give you plenty of room to state your thoughts and feelings. But I want to begin with Congresswoman Gabrielle Giffords' voice itself. Despite being a Democrat, she got the plum roll on Thursday when House members read the Constitution of reading the First Amendment. Let's listen to that.
Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press or the right of the people peaceably to assemble and to petition the government for redress of grievances.
The right of the people peaceably to assemble. Gabrielle Giffords Thursday on the House floor. Obviously, that right has been at least challenged by the assassination attempt on her, which resulted in six deaths and more than a dozen people injured. We know that Giffords already felt threatened. Here she is again, this time on MSNBC in March of last year, after Sarah Palin had posted a map with 20 Democratic congressional districts, including Giffords, depicted with crosshairs placed over them.
I think it's important for all leaders, not just leaders of the Republican Party or the Democratic Party. There's certainly a lot of independents out there that they may not even resonate towards, but community leaders, figures in our community to say, look, this, we can't stand for this. I mean, this is a situation where they really need to realize that the rhetoric and firing people up and, you know, even things, for example, we're on Sarah Palin's targeted list, but the thing is that the way that she has it depicted has the crosshairs of a gun sight over our district. And when people do that, they've got to realize there's consequences to that action.
Gabrielle Giffords in March on MSNBC. Palin also tweeted at that time for conservatives to, quote, reload. This, of course, is breaking out as the main political flashpoint conversation in the last few days. We will have that conversation, but we'll also talk about other implications today. We do have the crosshairs map issue, and you can see the map itself if you haven't seen it elsewhere, as our thoroughly unscientific poll question on our politics website. It's a free country today. It's a freecountry.org. Was the Palin crosshairs map beyond the pale, whether or not it contributed to the shooting, or was it obviously about peaceful electoral targeting? See the full question, see the map, post your response at our politics website, itsafreecountry.org. Also, after the show today at noon, we will continue with a live chat on our site, itsafreecountry.org. Join me for a live chat about how Tucson changes us at noon today. And of course, we'll talk not just about the political vitriol issue today. Our first guest is Newsweek's Jonathan Alter. His book about President Obama's first year in office, The Promise, is out in paperback now. The president has asked the nation for a moment of silence at 11 o'clock this morning to honor the Tucson shooting victims. We will participate in that at 11 o'clock. Jonathan Alter has a post on Daily Beast today recalling President Clinton after the Oklahoma City bombing and how President Obama might respond today. Hi, Jonathan. Welcome back to WNYC and unfortunately under these circumstances.
Hi, Brian. Nice to talk to you.
You write that the moment of silence is a good start, but will not be enough. What are you looking for from the White House?
Well, the reason I think, first of all, that it's a good start is that the overall message over the next few weeks should be less noise. And there's no better way to express that than to have a moment of silence, which is very much in the American tradition, not just after 9/11, but if you go back to Armistice Day after World War One, for many years in this country, at 11 a.m. on the 11th day of the 11th month, November 11th, Americans stood for a moment of silence. So I think it's an appropriate place to begin. But he obviously needs to address the nation more than once on this issue. We don't know yet whether it'll be in the next few days at a funeral or at some other event, but clearly on January 25th, the president will give his State of the Union address, and that will be his main moment for both speaking for the nation and also trying to chart a new course from here and to try to give meaning to this event so that perhaps something positive could come of it.
You write that President Clinton used the 1995 Oklahoma City bombing by an anti-government extremist named Timothy McVeigh to tamp down the right-wing militia movement that was growing at that time. How did Clinton do that?
Well, I think he part of it was done for him because there was such revulsion, if you remember, at the militias and those who had influenced Timothy McVeigh and the other perpetrators of the Oklahoma City bombing. But part of it was just very skillful speech writing by the president and his team, and in that they captured the moment. He chose his words well, and the national reaction was to take it down a couple notches, which is what I think we want now as well. So in 1994, in those midterms where Clinton and the Democrats were wiped out, the rhetoric was very hot. We think it's bad now, and Gabby Giffords and others say it's that it's worse than ever, according to long-serving members of Congress. But it was quite bad in 1994. After Oklahoma City, things calmed down to the point that in 1996, when Clinton was running for re-election, there was actually not nearly as much noise and over-the-top political rhetoric as there had been in 1994. Now, it came back again after the Lewinsky scandal. It's arguably worse than ever now, but these things wax and wane. So what we want now is to use this moment to have the dialogue become more civil and have it have the overheated rhetoric generally wane so that we can have a more reasonable national debate.
My sense of that era, and this show is already on the air at the time of the Oklahoma City bombing in 1995, as you know, is that the bombing itself was so horrific to so many people on the right, including in the militia movement, such as they were at that time, that the event itself helped to tamp down that rhetoric.
Right.
That doesn't say it changed people's politics from left to right, right to left, whatever. But in terms of the militia movement itself, where people were going out into the woods and doing, you know, pseudo-military training to get ready to resist the government and all of that, that really either went further underground or just really diminished in the amount that people were participating in that kind of thing and talking about that kind of thing. Is that your recollection?
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. And I think we might see some kind of a similar effect this time, although it's hard to know for sure. The Tea Party folks don't want to get blamed for this, shouldn't be blamed for it. There is no direct connection. But I do think you're going to see a little bit more vigilance on the right about some of the rhetoric. So, for instance, a radio talk show host in Florida named Joyce Kaufman, who said things like, if ballots don't work, try bullets on the air. She was supposed to be the chief of staff to incoming freshman Republican Alan Scott in Florida. And before the Giffords shooting, it was decided by the powers that be within the Republican Party that wasn't a good idea. So I think you're going to see more of that. The question is whether some of their condemnations of this kind of hate speech will extend to, to talk radio, because that is a lot of the way they communicate with their base. And there's just hateful stuff that's said on talk radio all over the country every day. So part of the way this debate plays out will be whether the right and the left, coming down on Daily Coast, for instance, which attacked Gabby Giffords, and somebody on Daily Coast's couple of weeks ago said she's dead to me because she was going to vote for this tax compromise. And this kind of language can be tamped down if people are sensitive to it. That doesn't mean that we need censorship. It doesn't mean that nobody ever again should use any kind of a military or warlike metaphor. Those have been part of politics for a long time. The very word campaign comes from Roman wars. But people do need to be conscious that, you know, at a certain point, as President Clinton said last year on the 15th anniversary of Oklahoma City, you know, you don't know how these words are going to affect not just the serious, but the delirious. And the interaction of hate speech and underlying mental illness can be a very potent combination.
Jonathan Alter from Newsweek and author of the book about President Obama's first year in office, The Promise, my first guest on WNYC today, first of many, as we will talk about many ramifications of the Arizona shooting over the weekend. And listeners, the large question on the table is, how does the Tucson massacre change us? How does it change us as a nation? How should it change us, if at all, as a nation? 212-433-WNYC, 212-433-9692. And I was just going to raise a difference between this, as far as what we know of it, and Oklahoma City, but we have a caller who wants to do the same thing, so I'm going to let him do it, and that is Alex in Jamaica. Alex, you're on WNYC. Hello.
Brian, I just wanted to mention that with Timothy McVeigh, you had an individual who, even though he had a very evil set of beliefs, had a coherent set of beliefs. This gentleman currently arrested, he seems completely insane. He seems infatuated with the congresswoman, and he just seems to not only have not any kind of political view, he doesn't seem to have any kind of coherent view towards the world. So I think unless President Obama is going to come out against, you know, giving weapons to the mentally ill, which I think we're all in favor of, I don't see a lot of political hay to be made on this.
Alex, thank you. And what about that lack of a parallel? Because he's right from what we know about the difference between Timothy McVeigh and Jared Laughlin. Although some of Laughlin's ranting certainly were political, it doesn't seem like he had an organized political agenda or was as much in his right mind, if you will, as Timothy McVeigh.
Yeah, I think that's probably right. And we do have a story up on the Daily Beast, which, as you know, is merged with Newsweek, that there's a right-wing activist named Miller out of Milwaukee who it seems like the shooter was, you know, tuning into his rantings, but clearly this young man is mentally ill. And you know, I think one of the ways the conversation could be broadened would be to talk about whether we're doing enough for the mentally ill. When he was thrown out of Pima Community College, they said, you know, you can't come back until you have some sort of mental health examination. That's what his parents were told. Well, we don't know yet whether his parents had the money for that, but state and federal budgets for mental health are on the chopping block right now. And if we really want to look at, you know, some of the underlying causes of this, not that it could have necessarily been avoided if he'd been treated, but we might have increased the odds of avoiding this sort of thing, then we need to, you know, take a look at mental health budgets. And so I think I'm one of those people who tries to see if something positive can come out of these horrific events. So use another example, Judge Roll, who was a George H.W. Bush appointee to the bench and died on Saturday. He was very outspoken on the issue of these 100 judicial vacancies, which it's created this appalling shortage of judges because of dysfunction in the United States Senate. And so if folks wanted to honor him, and if President Obama wanted to, you know, when he goes down his laundry list in the State of the Union, if he wanted to create a little impetus behind filling these vacancies, you might quote Judge Roll on those vacancies in the same way that he's likely to quote Gabby Giffords on taking it down a notch in our political rhetoric.
And we could also talk about gun policy, certainly after Virginia Tech and Columbine. And some of the other incidents. It was really gun violence that and gun laws that rose to the surface as the political debate right away. This time it's Sarah Palin's crosshair map and political vitriol in general. But Arizona, from what I understand, is one of three states in the nation, only three, that allows people to carry a concealed weapon without a permit and without training. Now, here was a kid who had actually been expelled from his community college because he was deemed mentally unstable but and unwilling to do anything about it. And yet he was able to walk in to a gun shop not that long ago, I think it was in November, and purchase this weapon that he used in the shooting.
I wish that I could be confident that this would lead to more gun control. Just the makeup of the new Congress, I think, makes that highly unlikely. But it, we can at least prevent backsliding. You know, they have the NRA has a bunch of bills that they'd like to get through to weaken even existing gun control legislation, and they're blocking Andrew Traver from being head of the Bureau of Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms. You know what the reason is, Brian, that his nomination has been blocked?
Right.
That he was an advisor to a police organization on its gun violence reduction program. That has led to the stalling of his nomination, that he was working with a police group. So that's the state to which we've arrived in the gun control debate. It's really very dispiriting.
Maybe
at least that can change.
I think Michael in Staten Island wants to weigh in on that aspect of it, too. Michael, you're on WNYC.
Yes, good morning, Brian. Excellent show, as always.
Thank you.
I just wanted to say that there are crackpots and lunatics in every country in the world, but what differentiates us from the rest of the civilized world is that we allow them easy access to the weapons, allowing them to carry out the horrific deeds which they do. And unfortunately, I think what we're going to see here is that there will be much wringing of hands, lots of publicity, sympathy, and so on and so forth for a week or so. And then the whole subject will literally die because nothing concrete will happen, except that perhaps in this particular case, as this unfortunate congressman is obviously a member of Congress, it may be that for once our political leaders will actually be more frightened of being attacked themselves than being afraid of the NRA. So perhaps something will come of it.
That's a great point, and especially, you know, thank God Gabby Giffords is still alive. You know, most important that she's still alive. But there is on this particular debate, there is an additional benefit. Should she be able to function? And we don't know that. So as the caller says, you know, normally if there's a shooting and a death, then everybody mourns the victims and they move on pretty quickly. But if you have a living reminder of the consequences of allowing guns into the hands of the mentally ill, the consequences, indirect as they may be, of over-the-top rhetoric, then you could see a situation where Gabby Giffords could become a very important national figure who was almost a high-credibility referee on some of these issues.
And, of course, she was a moderate, and it's ironic that sometimes it is the moderates who are the targets of the most political vitriol. And, again, not to tie the shooting to this, because we have no evidence that that the shooter had thought it through to this level of political analysis. But, you know, sometimes the moderates who really wind up in the crosshairs the most, that's most of the Democrats who were defeated in the last midterm election, were not those in more liberal, more safe districts, but those who were moderate. Gabrielle Giffords, in a largely Republican district, barely survived. She is somebody who voted against Nancy Pelosi for Speaker, actually for House Minority Leader now, to retain her leadership position with the Democrats, one of just 19, I believe, among the House Democrats to vote against Nancy Pelosi recently. She made a point of how she was a gun owner and supported gun rights, did Gabby Gifford. So, you know, some of this is pretty ironic in that respect. Khalid in Tribeca, you're on WNYC. Hello, Khalid.
Oh, hi, Mr. Lehrer.
Hello? Hey, yes, Khalid, you are on the air. Thanks for calling.
Good morning, Mr. Lehrer. I would like to bring this a point since, you know, Mr. Alto was talking about this guy that he's mentally ill or whatever. He, you know, like needed a psychic help. And all of a sudden, I was just trying to compare the two shootings. The one just happened in Islamabad a couple of days ago.
Yes.
The governor of Punjab province was shot by this so-called elite force cop. And, you know, could you ask him, maybe explain to me, you know, why one gets so quickly considered as an extremist and terrorist, and the other one is mentally ill and he needed help, but his parent didn't have the money. So I just, you know, it seems like always that there's a double standard here. Could you have him explain to me a little bit better?
Well, Jonathan, you can go into that if you want. Khalid, you know, funny enough, there's an op-ed by Ross Douthat in the New York Times today with the subheadline of Why We Are Not Pakistan. And
this is exactly what since I heard this, Ms. Lehrer, this is what I'm thinking. What is the difference between that idiot in Islamabad and that guy in Arizona?
I mean, well, I don't know anything about the mental state of the shooter in Pakistan, but the point of the column is that the United States has a long tradition of peaceful turnover of power. And even if an assassination, or in this case, assassination attempt, takes place from time to time, we also have these glorious displays, such as Nancy Pelosi just the other day handing over power in the House to John Boehner with a great flourish and a great smile on her face, celebrating our nonviolent democratic change of power. I remember when Al Gore finally lost that disputed election officially to George W. Bush, and he made such a show of saying he now supports George W. Bush as the legitimate president of the United States.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Thank God for being in America. I mean, obviously. But then again, you know, what is the difference between that guy who is inciting hate on a sitting on a radio as a DJ or whatever, saying if the ballot doesn't work, use the bullet? What is the difference between this imam sitting in a mosque telling people that, oh, kill her or do this? So, you know,
right. In that respect, maybe not so much. Jonathan, a last word on this?
It's a very interesting question. You know, the motive of the shooter in the assassination of the governor of the Punjab was that the governor had come out against these anti-blasphemy laws that were using to repress dissident Pakistanis and impose more Islamic law. And, you know, so there was a direct political religious motivation in that assassination. And as you mentioned, in the United States, it's much more often incoherent politically.
Jonathan, before you go, and we have Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy of Long Island standing by, and some of you know that Congresswoman McCarthy was elected after her husband was killed in the Long Island Railroad massacre back in the 1990s, so she's going to have very relevant thoughts on this. But, Jonathan, a number of people are tweeting to us suggesting that we should use the T word in this discussion, which is terrorism. Have you thought about that in your writing, or do you think that would be, we're already saying assassination or assassination attempt, do you think terrorism would be the right word or one of the right words?
You know, I really don't. I mean, I think it's overused as it is, and I don't get the sense that the aim of this mentally ill man was to spread terror in the populace. You know, he had developed a sick obsession with Gabrielle Giffords. He was, you know, listening to his own demons. It sounded like he wanted to be famous. He mentioned something about being on TV in one of his web rantings. But, you know, terrorism reflects a very particular motivation, whatever the political agenda, but the motivation is to spread fear and terror among the general populace, and I don't think that that was part of this, at least from what we know so far.
Well, we're going to pick up with Congresswoman McCarthy in just a minute, whether it's going to have that effect, whether people will be afraid to go out to meetings with their members of Congress. That would be a function of terror, whether members of Congress themselves will be afraid to meet with their constituents in the kind of unfettered way that Congresswoman Giffords had been doing. So we will bring that up in a minute. We want to thank Jonathan Alter.
Yeah. Brian, can I just say one quick thing
on
that point? That I think it would be a great show of support for everybody to go to their next meeting with their congressman or congresswoman to stand up in the face of this kind of thinking, and it would be good for democracy. So show up at the next community meeting that your congressman has.
That's a great suggestion. Jonathan Alter's book, The Promise, President Obama Year One, is now out in paperback at the start of Year Three with a new epilogue. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy, next. Brian Lehrer on WNYC, as we talk about whether we are a changed nation today after the assassination attempt and massacre in Tucson on Saturday, we do have the crosshairs map issue as our thoroughly unscientific poll question on our politics website. It's a free country today. Was the Sarah Palin crosshairs map beyond the pale, whether or not it contributed to this shooting, or was it obviously about peaceful electoral targeting? See the full question and post your response at our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. And don't forget that at noon today, we will have a live online chat, which I and others will participate in, along with as many of you who want to participate at 12 o'clock on It's a Free Country. org. Meanwhile, members of Congress are figuring out how to protect themselves after the Tucson massacre. So many of them meet constituents in an open-air, no-security environment like Giffords was in on Saturday. Does that have to change? And are gun laws newly relevant to members of Congress themselves? Congresswoman Giffords was actively afraid of violence against her. We played one clip of her to that effect already. She also had her office door smashed in after her vote for the health reform law, after which she was asked if she would continue to meet in unsecured Congress on Your Corner events like the one on Saturday, and she said she would.
Are you still going to be out there publicly talking about health care?
We're not planning on changing our schedule. My belief is you got to do your job. I mean, your job is to be a representative, and that's not just a job title to job description. So if you're going to represent people, you got to get out and make sure you understand what they're thinking.
That was from Arizona Public Media, an interview August 7th, 2009. But what will members of Congress do now? The House has issued a warning to members to take prudent precautions. So let's talk about it with Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy, Democrat from Long Island. As some of you know, her husband was killed in the Long Island Railroad massacre in the 1990s, after which she ran for office largely as a result of that. Congresswoman, always good to have you on the show. Welcome back to WNYC.
Thank you, Brian. It's always a pleasure to be here with you.
What are your reflections on Tucson, and including in light of your own experience?
Well, I will say that I'm certainly not going to stop any of my public appearances. It is our job, as Gabby had mentioned in the piece that you played just a few seconds ago. And many a times when we're at large gatherings, or if we already know that they're probably going to be an unruly gang meeting, the police are actually notified, usually by whoever is sponsoring it. And so we already have pretty good protection at home. Nassau County Police have always had their eye on the members of Congress. And down in Washington, I feel very secure with the Capitol Hill Police. We don't want to be restricted. We certainly should always be aware and alert on our surroundings and what's going around us. But to be to be very honest with you, especially with the perspective that I'm coming from, I am a member of Congress, but I also take care of over 600,000 constituents. They are probably in the same limelight as I am, as we saw with, unfortunately, those that were killed when Gabby was shot. So with that being said, I shouldn't see us any more special than making sure that we have protection for our citizens.
What exactly did the House Security Office tell members after shootings on Saturday? Are you under any new instructions or suggestions?
They just said to be prudent, and if we were going to some sort of an event, if we felt that we were at threat for any reason, you know, we should work with our county police. The FBI and the Capitol Hill Police have called. I can't speak for other parts of the country, but they certainly notified me on Saturday, about offering us special protection if I felt I needed it. So with that being said, they are on top of it. But I think, Brian, you know, I think the bigger question is, what I'll be doing later this week is introducing legislation basically to cut back on the large capacity clips that was used in the shooting. That was the same kind of clip that was used when my husband was killed and my son was also shot in the head. And just to say, the latest news out on Gabby is that she has had no swelling in her brain. That's an excellent sign, especially after this amount of time. Hopefully that means that she's not going to have any long-term effects and will be on the road to recovery.
Why the clips? And for a lot of our listeners who don't own guns and don't know what the clip actually means as opposed to some other kinds of clip, why would you target the clips in particular?
Well, the particular shooter in Arizona, and certainly Colin Ferguson on the Long Island Railroad, used what we call large capacity clips. It's a clip that holds so many bullets. Some of these clips go from 10 all the way up to 33. The shooter in Arizona had a clip. They haven't actually come out with the exact size, but we know that he was able to fire off 20 bullets before who I consider a hero, the woman that was able to knock the clip out of his hand when he was reaching to change clips. Colin Ferguson used a clip that had 15 bullets in it. These are guns that can fire rapidly, but it's also the amount of bullets that they can spray out there in seconds.
And what about access to guns on the part of the mentally disturbed? This came up earlier in the show, and from what I understand, Arizona is one of only three states that allows people legally to carry concealed weapons without a permit and without some kind of training. And yet here was an individual who had been expelled from his community college because he was mentally unstable and unwilling to deal with that. And yet he was able to legally walk into a gun store and purchase this weapon.
Well, and if you remember the Virginia Tech shooting, I had legislation that had already had passed the House once before dealing with that issue, basically banning anybody that was mentally ill, but they had to be adjudicated by a judge. The suspect in the Arizona shooting, he had not been adjudicated to be mentally ill, even though the Army had turned him down for a number of reasons, and he also had been expelled from college until he had a mental evaluation. That is a floor, obviously, that is out there. I don't know how you write legislation because it's very, very difficult to just say, okay, you're mentally ill, you can't buy a gun. That's not the way our system works. But President Bush did sign that legislation banning anyone that had been adjudicated by a judge to be mentally incompetent that they could not buy a gun.
Let me take a phone call for you from Harold in Rockville Center. Harold, you're on WNYC with Congresswoman McCarthy. Hello.
I'm calling to congratulate the Congresswoman for her behavior when she attended a Rockville Center Democratic Club meeting right prior to the election, when we were invaded by a group of 15 or 20 people who raucously tried to prevent her from making her presentation. I admired the calm and the deliberate manner in which she held the meeting together, and I never had a chance to thank her for for her work on that evening because it was an admirable demonstration.
Congresswoman McCarthy, do you know the incident that he's talking about?
Yes, I do. It was during the re-election campaign, and the couple of the debates that I had gone to, there seemed to be a group of people that came really just to harass me and certainly prevent other people from asking questions. The police were there at that particular event because they had been notified that there were some unruly people there. But again, I happen to believe that everybody has the right to express their opinion. I can disagree with them. They can disagree with me. But I think that the louder they got, the softer my voice became, mainly because I'm not going to incite anger from my end. My job is there for everybody. I don't expect everybody to support what I do. But I thank Harold for saying those kind words. It was a rough night, to say the least. And I had gone to two events after that, and we found that the same group of people were basically following me around just to disrupt the meetings.
Do you think after this incident in Arizona that your reaction to those kinds of incidents will need to be different?
No, I don't. I will not change on who I am and how I conduct my meetings and certainly debates. But with that being said, obviously the Nassau police are going to probably to be a little bit more looking at my schedule and probably making the decisions on whether they feel that they should be there or not. The majority of people I'm not concerned about. There are a lot of angry people out there. I understand certainly their anger on a lot of issues with the economy that we have been going through. We see, unfortunately, child abuse and domestic abuse going up, and those are signs of stress. And when people are totally stressed out, they do very, very foolish things. And with that being said, I think politicians do have, in my opinion, a strong responsibility to set the tone at these debates and meetings. And I think putting rhetoric out there does not help the situation. So I'm hoping that our leaders and all politicians and anybody in public office certainly debate the issues, be passionate about those issues, but don't put any rhetoric out there that someone that could be possibly mentally unbalanced looking at that as a red light to do bodily harm to someone.
Yeah. You know, you talked about Nassau police perhaps offering you additional protection at certain events. Is that their responsibility? We know how stretched Nassau County government is in dealing with debt and everything else. Not that the federal government isn't, but you're an elected member of the House of Representatives. Do you think that's a Nassau County function or a federal government function?
Actually, I think it's a federal government function, and you're absolutely right. I'm not comfortable pulling police from Nassau County to protect me when there are other parts of my district that they need to be at. I thank them, and we basically assess the areas that I'm going to be in. And I'm not comfortable, to be honest with you, with having them guard me. But they volunteer it. They feel, especially in certain situations, that it might be better for them to be there, whether I want it or not.
Congresswoman Carolyn McCarthy, Democrat from Long Island, thank you very much for talking with us today.
Thank you, Brian, and appreciate this opportunity to always be on your show.
Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, we're going to mark the 10th anniversary of Wikipedia. We also have a lot more to come on the Tucson shooting and its implications. You can keep posting to our politics website. It's a freecountry.org. Are we a changed nation in any way that matters after Saturday? And we have various perspectives from left, right, and center on our politics website. You can also find our fact box there. We're trying to put together the facts in one place of what we know and what we don't know about the Gifford shooting, from what Sarah Palin actually posted and actually didn't, to a rundown of some of the erroneous media reports circulating on the day of the shooting. It's all at itsafreecountry.org, where we will also have a live online chat on how we are a changed nation, coming up at noon today.